Shaq is going to be mad at me for this, by the way.
Mm-hmm. I already am. Oh, okay. I know it.
What is it?
Happy birthday.
Yeah, because it is your birthday, or it was two years ago.
When was your birthday?
The 7th.
Well, happy birthday late.
He doesn't. Thank you. He doesn't like people to celebrate it, so he just hides it from everyone.
Mm-hmm. My oldest daughter's the same way.
I hate that, because then I forget it. I forget it till a day late.
I thought you said you'd been practicing that thing.
That wasn't the best one. Also, I'll just apologize for my voice right away here, guys. Allergy season.
Too much.
Don't even go there. Cross the line.
What'd Cinderella say when she got to the ball?
I have no idea.
Gah.
Oh my God.
Tonight we have Lee Morris, motorcycle enthusiast. He's one of the nicest guys in the world until you give him a reason not to be. Lee, I don't see you too often, but when I do, it seems like we pick up right where we left off. Give you the shirt right off his back or the chaps right off his ass. My only pair of shafts I've ever owned are right here, and they're the ones that Lee gave me years ago.
Oh, he gave them to you?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I never paid for these. Lee gave them to me. Good guy.
Why'd you
Good
give guy. Them to him?
He needed them.
Like why? He was cold or what?
You just gotta have chaps. I hope he bought a pair of gloves now, finally.
Wait, for your actual chaps that you just took off of you and gave to him, or did you have an extra
pair? I had an extra pair.
Okay.
I had an extra pair.
I was going to say, he's not worth that much.
I agree. No, I went another poker run. We was on, I think I was bitching about not having gloves. My fingers got cold. It was a pretty chilly day that day.
Wait, you got cold?
My hands did on the bike. And then
weird.
And next thing I know.
No hair on his hands.
I know.
Lee left the bar early. He don't stick around too long. He's got shit to do. So then I come out and I looked at my bike. There's a nice pair of warm gloves hanging on the handlebars. Just knew where they came from. Lee Morris.
Super nice.
Yep. Awesome. So Lee, you brought your bike up tonight. How many deer have you hit on a motorcycle?
4.
Holy shit, I thought I was like 2.
Like, whoa, and you didn't wreck?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
All the times? Or did you?
No, there was once I stayed upright. Well, twice actually. After the first one was between Albion and St. Ed on a rainy night. I left Mom and Dad's house, and Mom wanted me to stay there, and I couldn't. I had to ride. I had to get home, so I got halfway between Albion and St. Ed and a doe and a yearling went across the road, and I smucked the yearling.
Oh, no.
I stayed up straight. I went in the ditch. The deer was wrapped around my front wheel, my front fender, locked up my wheel, and I went in the ditch, came back up on the highway. And
it was rainy.
And it was rainy.
What's going through your head when all that chaos is happening?
I should have listened to Mom. The third one I hit right past the link, north of here.
63.
I hit that with my turbo bike. I was at Mom and Dad's, and there's a guy with a pickup that kept going by, revving up his pickup. So I jumped on my bike and went around him about 110.
Oh, no.
I slowed down enough to look in the mirror. And when I looked in the mirror, deer ran in front of me.
Oh, geez.
So what, did it come over you or how? Like
No, it ran in my front wheel, actually.
So you ran over it?
No, I hit it, and then it pushed me into the ditch.
Oh my gosh.
So my bike miraculously stayed up again for a short period of time. And during that time, I thought, okay, I'm going to join my mom and dad. You know, I'm going to die. I was probably doing 60, 65 miles an hour.
Wow.
And then my bike decided to lay down. So I was like riding my bike, trying to get on top of it.
Like jump on the side of it so you're not getting skidded?
I was trying to, but I couldn't get my foot away from the brake pedal.
Oh.
So then my bike caught in the ditch and flipped. When it flipped, it threw me off the bike.
Oh my
gosh. Landed in a giant pile of clover, just like a giant pillow.
Nice.
And I'm like, thank God.
You must have a four-leaf one under your head or something. My God.
But then I looked up and my bike's above me flipping in the air.
Uh-oh.
And I thought it's going to land on me and kill me. But it landed past me, thank God. The guy in the pickup was actually from Oklahoma.
And he watched all this shit unfold.
Yeah. And he came back and I stood up and I fell right back down. And he said, man, that's the craziest damn thing I've ever seen. You broke your leg. And I said, no, I didn't break my leg. I broke my damn bike. I had a saddlebag laying off to the side. My windshield was laying off to the side. And he helped me get my bike back up. We put all the parts in his pickup, and then he followed me home.
Where was the deer?
Shapers.
Yeah.
Did the deer die?
Yeah. Yep. Yep. There's two. I've killed.
As it should.
Yeah. I've killed two deer with my bikes and just wounded two.
So what about the other two? I got to hear the rest
okay,
of them now.
Brother of mine, not blood, but brother, he and I love to ride at night, plumber. And we were coming back from Sioux City. We came through Norfolk. It was probably 1 o'clock in the morning. And we drank a Red Bull. Because we're into power drinks, I guess. Them anyway, energy drinks. Anyway, we left Norfolk and we went through Madison. And I told him then, I wish we could have a place to stop for coffee. And he said, let's just get to Club 81. We'll smoke a cigarette. So we went around Madison, and where you make the curve, where you turn off to go to the pork plant, mm-hmm. you curve back and go south, a big buck Ooh. Was in the highway. And I didn't see it, but I heard Plumber let off on his throttle, and I knew something was wrong then.
Yeah.
So I looked over, and this deer was like right beside him.
Ugh.
So I went into the ditch to get away from the deer, and that deer ran over to me and then jumped over my front fender.
Oh, my God.
Plumber's seen this all happen. I went out another 20 feet, 30 feet. It's hard to say. But I went further on down into the ditch, and I stopped, and my throttle was wide open. I couldn't let go of my grip. I was just petrified, scared to death. I thought, and then I was laughing because I thought Plumber actually hit the deer. And he came up and grabbed my hand, took my hand off the throttle, said, what the hell's wrong with you?
It's you.
Yeah.
Kind of in a bit of shock. You just gave me goosebumps like four times.
Yeah. My road name is Roadkill. I've hit every damn thing but a fish. I have. I hit a turkey one day on the blacktop coming back from work, and yeah.
I've hit a turkey before, but not on a motorcycle.
I've hit turtle doves, and they just blow up in your face.
Oh, yeah.
Feathers everywhere.
You have a windshield, though, right?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah, that one, yeah.
And the last one?
The last one would have been west of O'Neill, Nebraska, and... That one, I hit the back of it. I slowed down enough, though, because there was several of them going across the highway. I slowed down enough. I was probably maybe doing 20 and just bumped into the back of it. But that was scary, too. Mm-hmm. You know, when you see all them deer and you don't know which one you're going to hit.
Oh, yeah.
Which one you're going to miss. Or if they're just all going to, attack
right.
you or whatever.
You had a helmet on every time, though, with that, right?
Yes, yes.
So are you one of them that doesn't wear a helmet now that we
yes.
have the law? You don't wear one or
no,
you do?
No. No,
you
don't
wear
one. No.
And what? Like, what's the reasoning?
Freedom.
Freedom.
I knew both of you were going to fight me on that.
Yeah.
Because I just don't get it.
It's just your personal choice.
I agree. I'm 100% agree with that.
Right.
I'm curious.
I see both sides of it.
I was really curious about that with you because, about half the time I see you with a legal helmet on years ago.
Yep.
And half the time with an illegal one.
Yep.
Hold on.
What's an illegal helmet?
Not
DOT approved.
Don't worry about it.
I don't know the difference.
It's not like DOT approved.
Right.
So how do you know just looking at it that it's not?
It's got a, you can fold them in half.
Oh. Yeah.
They're like a little brain bucket
mm-hmm.
that don't have any.
That sounds about right for if you hit the highway, you're going to need it to pick up your brain when you don't have a helmet on.
That's a good one, Katie.
Fair.
Good job. You are funny sometimes.
I hate you. Anyways, yeah. So tonight's episode, we're going to call it Life Behind Bars. So we're going to dive right into that. So first thing we want to talk about, Lee, you used to be a pretty good drinker.
Yes.
Yes. So, but you've been sober now for how long?
19 and a half years.
That's awesome.
Haven't had any.
So can we kind of talk about like why you decided to become sober, or like why you got to the point where you knew that you needed to quit drinking?
To be honest, I started drinking at a very young age. Like a lot of Midwestern families, I think that drinking's involved with weddings.
Everything.
Yeah,
every single
funerals.
Thing that you do.
For my high school graduation, I had a 16-gallon keg,
Whoa.
That was my high school graduation.
Dang.
So I couldn't wait to get the hell out of that school, So drinking was a big part of my family's life, my friends' lives. Everybody drank. So I guess I just jumped in wholeheartedly and
sure
at first.
I think a lot of us do around here. Right. It's part of our lives.
Right. And growing up in a small town, there just wasn't a whole lot more to do. I mean, grab your buddies and go grab a 12-pack and drive around. Or
even if you did do stuff like go set line and stuff, you're doing it with beers.
Yep,
you know?
Yep. You're coon hunting and all that.
The normal thing.
Yep. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. So I basically started at a real young age and just became a professional at a very young age too, I guess you would say.
So what made you give a few instances where you think that you might have crossed the line with that, where you actually thought to yourself, I need to just stop doing this?
Okay.
Or what made you come to that?
One episode in my life pops up real good with my ex-wife, actually, my first ex-wife. We weren't married yet, but I had her car, and I went back to Albion to get ready to go hunting the next morning for opening season of prairie chicken. And my younger brother worked at the bar, and one of the bars. So I went to the bar, and I ran into an old classmate of mine that I graduated high school with, and he and I started drinking, and I don't remember even leaving the bar, but I know I was drunk. And my brother Mike made me promise I'd go to mom and dad's, sleep there, do something. And I didn't want to disturb them. So my brother Mike said, well, you can go over to my place, you know, and crash there if you want. So I did. And passed out. I suppose I have no idea what time it was. The bar was still, it was probably midnight maybe. And I woke up thinking, oh my God, they're going to be waiting on me to go hunting. So I ran outside and jumped in my car, or my ex-wife's car. I didn't clean the frost off the windshield or nothing. And I took off, and about two blocks later, I hit a parked car.
Ooh.
Oh, no.
And lo and behold, the chief of police in the wonderful town was just getting off duty, because it was like 4:30 in the morning.
Perfect timing.
Yeah, and he seen the accident. He didn't know, you know, what the situation was. And in the meantime, I was walking up to this house thinking, oh, my God, I got to let these people know I hit their car. And I walked up, and lo and behold, it was another friend of mine. It wasn't his vehicle, but it was his house that I walked up to. And he said, oh, my God, Morris, you're bleeding. I had a bloody face and everything went through the windshield. Long story short, I said, Steve, man, I'm sorry I hit your car. And he started laughing. I said, what the hell's so funny? And he said, Lee, that's not my car. It's the neighbor's car. So I went walking over towards the neighbor's house, and then I seen the twirly lights, and I just started walking towards the cop car, you know.
You just walked up and surrendered,
yeah,
basically?
Yeah, I said, I'm the one that hit the car. Mm-hmm. I quit drinking at midnight, you know, and it's 4:30. There's no way I'm drunk or anything. Well, Mr. Morris, we need to fill out an accident report, and I kind of smell alcohol. Would you mind giving a breathalyzer? And I filled the breathalyzer in the car. So then he took me down to the police station, which I blew another breathalyzer there, and yeah, spent 8 hours in jail.
Shoot.
That was a...
So did you get a DUI out of that?
Yes, yep. That was my first DUI. I've had two.
Okay.
I had three MIPs. I was picked up 7 times for MIP.
Holy, but, that's... Oh, that could,
but I've only
that's
been...
That's a record.
I've only been charged for 3 of them. So for one of them was a state patrolman that picked me up. Me and my ex-wife and another high school friend were driving around Albion. My high school friend looked old enough to buy, so we stopped at the liquor store. He got a 12-pack of beer. We were in my car. My ex-wife was sitting between the two of us, and we headed out of town. We didn't make it a quarter of a mile out of town, and the state patrolman pulled us over and made me dump my beer out.
That's the worst part, when they made you dump it all out.
Yeah, yeah.
And they make you do it in front of the headlights.
he wanted to make
it's
sure.
It's like put you on the spotlight.
I tried. I was in the passenger seat because Greg was driving, and I tried to sneak the 12-pack underneath the car. But
why does that go through your head? That's happened to me before, where I'm like, I'm just going to slowly open the door and put it under my car, when in reality, the cop car's behind us. So right when we drive away, they're going to be like, well, they just shoved all the beer under their stupid car.
Exactly.
That was an idiot move.
Yep. Yeah, there was several instances where I was... in high school even, I'd carry things too far. We'd be drinking and stuff. My friends would be like, okay, we're going to go home. We're going to go home. And we're going to quit drinking, whatever. And I'm like, well, I'm not done yet, you know. So I drink until I passed out. And that's just what my goals were, I thought, you know. Yeah. That's what you had to do. There was no sense in quitting. I didn't want to be a quitter, you know.
Yeah.
But, and then with that, it just progressed. I mean, the more alcohol I drank, the more alcohol I needed. You know, I needed to drink more to get to that happiness, you know.
Built but up then, your tolerance.
Then that happiness didn't stay as long. You know, I was a funny drunk for a while, but then I was somebody you didn't even want to talk to. I mean, I'd come back after I got out of high school, went to college in Norfolk for diesel technology, and I'd come back on the weekends, and I'd walk in mom and dad's front door, and half the family would walk out the back door. They didn't want to be around me because they knew what was going to happen.
Drunk all the time.
Yeah.
But did you, I mean, were you still working throughout that whole thing?
So you were
considered a functional alcoholic.
Yes. Yep.
But it was like the second you got off work, you started drinking and like started drinking hard.
Yes. Yep. Yep.
So it wasn't like a slow progressing, like kind of like, but we, I feel like we do, we kind of binge drink around here and have a few beers between
each
other.
Speak for yourself.
You're right next to me drinking a beer, sir.
I could never just have a couple. I tried that. And to be honest with you, the last time I did drink was when my grandson was born. And he was supposed to be born on my dad's birthday, July 12th, but his little fart came a day early on July 11th.
Go get her.
Yeah, so my dad and I and my uncle, my dad's brother, went out and decided we were going to have a few beers. Well, we went bar hopping. I drove, of course, and we made it around about four or five different little bars, and we ended up back in town in Albion, and they wanted to go home. Well, I wasn't done yet, you know, so I had to get thrown out of the bar, and then I had to get arrested, and then I was done.
So but, just your problem was basically quitting. Like you
right.
were fun, but
once
you
I
just...
got started, I couldn't quit.
So that's interesting, because like my dad always has said, like growing up, he will quit drinking for like 3 weeks at a time just to see if he can.
Right.
He's done that several times, and I've always found that very interesting. But then like my mom's dad like just never drank because he had other siblings that had the trait that he knew that if he started drinking that he couldn't stop. So he just never started at all.
Right.
So it's interesting to hear there's other people like that.
Yes.
Was there any certain alcohol that you drink that would affect you more than others?
Everybody told me that I was all right if I stayed away from heavy beer, Bud Heavy.
Okay.
You need to drink light beer. You need to drink light beer. All I did with light beer was drink more of it and pee more. Mm-hmm. You know, I still got drunk.
But have you heard that before, like where certain people get mean with whiskey or rum depending on the different alcohols.
I probably kind of turn into a douche when I drink whiskey.
Do you?
I don't ever drink it anymore.
Like, do you get in fights? Like, how did you learn that? See, you learned that somehow. How did you learn it? Tell me.
Probably just remembering that I was acting like a dumbass.
But you probably got called out on it, or you wouldn't have known that.
Who would call me out on anything?
I would.
I didn't know you back then.
You got no stories on that?
On whiskey?
Uh-huh.
Oh, me and one of my buddies would just get a liter of Jack Daniels and drive around in my old Pontiac Grand Prix diesel and drink it warm out of the bottle.
Gross.
We had something to prove, I guess.
Yeah, yep.
And we did it. A lot of pukes.
I turn into the giggly, like chatty, I want to be everyone's friend when I drink whiskey. And I like will go all the way until my legs quit working and then someone has to carry me home. It's a good drunk.
Whiskey me would have really probably made fun of drunk whiskey, Katie.
I mean, you make fun of me now, so what's the
You're right.
Anyways, so what made you decide to actually get help and like to know that you wanted to quit? And like, what did you do to do that?
I guess with all the MIPs, the DUIs, the failed relationships, the pain I caused the family, And my kids, I guess that all came to mind when I got sentenced to jail.
Not crossing the line? I'm sorry.
I had a 7 counts of procuring for minors charge in Greeley.
How'd that happen?
Motorcycle. Everybody wanted to ride.
Wait, how do you get 7?
I didn't. I had one person on my bike, but we went and got a 30-pack of beer so the rest of everybody could drink. And while we were drinking, I'd take one person and give them a ride, come back, grab another beer, give another person a ride.
Just trying to be a nice guy.
Yeah. Well, then I got too drunk. I couldn't even hold up my bike.
Ooh.
And the lady that sold us the beer at the gas station in Spalding decided that maybe she ought to call the city cop and let the city cop know that I was terrorizing the town on my bike.
Terrorizing? I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't go that far.
Right. Well, criminal mischief, criminal trespass, third-degree assault, all kinds of different charges were put against me through a failed relationship, out being stupid drinking. You know, it was like I had to drink every night. And sometimes it would carry on into the day.
So did you ever have people actually come up to you and tell you, you need to stop drinking?
Yes. Okay, that's kind of where I was going with this, is because, you know, the judge told me to quit drinking.
Okay.
My wife at the time said, Lee, you got a problem. We gotta get this handled. We got to, you know, get some help. My family said, Lee, you know, you're carrying this way too far. You're getting drunk every time you come back. You're drunk. Nobody mm-hmm. wants to be around you. You're mm-hmm. losing friends. You're losing sight of, you know, what we want to do. And long story short, I got sentenced to jail, and I started thinking about that, you know. And then my grandson was born right before I got sentenced to jail. And I guess it just hit me while I was sitting in that lonely jail cell. Hey, I've missed so much of my two daughters' lives. I don't want to do that with my grandson. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't want to do that with my granddaughter. So I need to get help. So I reached out to the sheriff at the time.
That's cool. So you'd think to reach out to him first.
Yeah.
He
was going to be the only way I could get out of jail, maybe to go to an AA meeting or anything like that, or see what kind of help the county would offer to help me, you know, with this problem. And he went and talked to somebody, my AA sponsor actually, and they agreed that it would be okay for me to leave jail on Thursday nights and attend AA meetings. So I started doing that. And at first, when you're court appointed to go to AA, when you walk into a meeting with a lot of old timers, you know, right. The first thing they're thinking of, okay, this asshole is just here to get his card signed. Mm-hmm. He's not going to get anything out of this. We're not going to waste our time, you know. But I assured them from day one that, you know, I am getting out of jail to attend these meetings, but it's not just to get out of jail. I want the help. I got to do something with this because I'm not going to waste any more time. My wasted time with my kids.
Missing time with your grandkid.
Right.
Yep.
So how does that, okay, I have to branch off. How does that work when you, like, do you have to get in a van handcuffed and get taken to the meeting, or how does that work?
In the small community that I was, where I was in jail, the AA meeting was actually right across the street.
Oh, that's convenient.
So they would unlock my jail cell and pat me down.
Just kind of trot across the street.
Making sure I wasn't going to take any contraband with me, which, what kind of contraband are you going to have in jail? Here's my Snickers, you know. So I went across the street, went to my AA meeting, and then when we got back, then we got strip searched because I was in jail with a couple people that weren't ready to get sober.
You had to spread the cheeks a little bit, did you?
Well, I wanted to ask that. That's what I was just going to cross the line. Do they actually do that?
They didn't put anything in me, but they did make me strip
toes
completely down. They, you know.
Do you have to spread your butt cheeks and cough?
No.
You don't have to. I didn't know. You don't have to. I really thought that you would have to.
No. Probably. No. Yeah. And in fact, I was probably stripped down to my underwear, probably, you know.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So, and it was one of the guys I was locked up with, he convinced his dad to come to AA and bring cigarettes for us.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Because you can't have cigarettes in jail?
He couldn't have cigarettes in jail, no.
Oh.
So, Billy.
Why would you think you could have cigarettes in jail?
I feel like I've seen all the TV shows where they're
smoking.
You
used to be able to. Years ago, you could. Okay. But now it's tobacco-free. They wouldn't even allow you to have chew.
So even if you snuck them into jail, where would you smoke them at?
We would fire up the shower. We would fill a sock with hair conditioner and turn the hot water on and get all the steam and the scent of that conditioner.
Wow.
And then I've actually seen it on these stainless steel stools. In the jail cells, you can put a pillow on top of that stool and push down, like make a suction.
Oh my.
And it will suck the water out of the bowl of the stool and it'll create a vacuum. So you can hover around this damn stool and smoke a cigarette.
My mind is blown right now. I don't know how to react. That is insane.
I've seen it happen.
Were you a smoker? Like, were you a smoker before jail?
Yeah.
So that was probably really hard too. You had to quit drinking and smoking all at once.
Right. But I went just about a year in county jail, and I didn't go more than 2 days without a chew. And
so how'd you sneak that in?
God bless her, my mother. And it don't matter. I've confessed to a couple of the deputies, the jailers, because they asked me, how are you getting this in?
And so they caught you with it?
Yeah.
Yeah, how does she get it in?
My mother, in these small jails, they never took us to a little conference room or a commissary room or anything. Mm-hmm. My mom would stand on one side of the bars in the little door with the hole in the window, mm-hmm. and she would talk to me through that. Mm-hmm. And they had cameras and stuff, but when you're there long enough, you start to figure things out. Them cameras don't work. They're just there to scare you, you know, because you walk out and see that there's no monitors or nothing. So my mother would go to the store and get me Copenhagen snuff packets. And she would take them out of the can, mm-hmm. put them in cellophane.
Oh my God!
Put them in her blouse, and then she'd look around and she'd throw them through the window.
Oh, she's probably freaking out about that. I mean, yeah. I would have been.
Twice I got caught with it. One time I left the damn shoe in my the jumpsuits had pockets.
Oh.
Well, where else do you hide things in your cell?
I always kept it on me.
Oh.
Keeping them in your whitey tighties.
Yeah, the old little pouch thing, you know. Yeah.
Under your wiener. Under your ball sack.
Thank you for that. That's insane, though. Like, I don't think chew. I don't know. Chew wouldn't be that bad, I guess, to sneak in. But cigarettes, yeah, the smoke thing.
The smoke thing happened with Billy. He had his dad bring a pack of Marlboros and a book of matches. And we got to smoke two of those cigarettes out of that pack before we did get caught.
So what happens when you get caught?
They take away your TV privileges, your radio.
I have all those questions, too. I have them all written down. Like, what? Tell me what kind of, like, what's a normal day in jail?
Well,
like start to finish.
Wake
I
up
know.
And beat the shit out of your roommate
no, I
so
just
he
wanna,
knows who's the boss right away.
I want to know like what privileges you have or what you, like what do you do all day?
Watch TV. The first thing in the morning you wake up, they serve breakfast. You hear a clank, 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 and then you get this little kid's meal breakfast that I threw a fit about because I was
like,
kind of
a like a little
guy.
Kid.
Yeah, you know, I got...
You going to eat your cornbread?
A little Krispies. Box of cereal, you know, and a little teeny cup of orange juice. What the hell, you know? So
that's not enough.
We would have breakfast, and then after breakfast, they would collect our dirty dishes, our dirty plate, rather, and stuff. And then pretty soon you'd hear a mop and a pan, and then they would bring cleaning supplies. So during the week, Monday through Friday, you cleaned your cell.
I have breakfast. That written down, too. I wondered who cleaned the cells.
Yeah, we cleaned the cells. We cleaned the cells Monday through Friday, and then weekends we didn't clean.
We need to send every man on the world like into jail for a week so they have to clean every day and know what that's like. And then maybe they'll start taking care of themselves. I don't know. Maybe they'll figure it out. You think? Do you clean now, Lee?
Yeah. I can't stand dirty dishes.
Uh-huh. Look at that.
Same here.
I can't
every
stand
time
laundry.
We found how to have world peace, I think. I don't
why
know.
Why are you yelling at me? I do my own dishes. You think they just do themselves?
I don't really know because I've barely been in your house. But
thank God.
After the cleaning and stuff, we'd watch TV until noon. Play if you did have cellies, you could request you
have
could
what
cellmates.
Oh, cellies.
So you could maybe fly a kite. Which flying a kite is the jailers come around once an hour to check on you. Okay. So they give you request forms. So you fill out a request form. I'd like to get the Albion News, or I'd like to get the Omaha World Herald, or I'd like the game of Scrabble.
Like reading material or
right,
something.
Or games or anything. So you'd fill that out and set it up on your counter, and then the following hour, when the people would come and do a cell check, they would take your kite, your request, and then they'd fill it for you, bring it to you. So if you're lucky enough to have a cellmate that you got along with, because I was locked up with a couple of guys that I didn't even... one guy just sat on this exercise bike and just pedaled it for hours. He just sat there and pedaled it.
Probably makes a bunch of annoying noise.
Yes.
I wouldn't want to leg wrestle
him. And it was just like, he didn't want to talk. You know, I suppose he was a nice enough guy, but he didn't talk or anything. Another guy that I was locked up with was from Minnesota. He had been through federal prison in Idaho. He came to Nebraska and got picked up for DUI over by... Greeley, between Cedar and Greeley, but obviously in Boone County.
So tough neighborhood.
Picked. Yeah, he got nailed on a backwoods highway for DUI, and he skipped, once he got bonded out, he skipped bond, you know, and bailed, so he finally up in Minnesota decided, hey, I can't have this hanging over my head. He came back to the courts. They threw him in jail for 60 days. So I got to spend some time with him. That's when I learned that you never, ever call somebody from prison that had been in prison. Don't ever call him a bitch.
Ooh.
He backhanded me. I thought he broke my damn jaw.
Oh, my God.
I said, brother, really? What the hell was that for? Don't you ever call me a bitch. I ain't nobody's bitch. You know? And I'm like, wow. No, I was waiting for him to crack a smile. No. He didn't. That was just one thing you don't do.
Oh, my gosh.
There's certain things you just don't do. You know?
How big was this guy?
He was a lot bigger than me.
Oh, okay. I'm like, I mean, I feel like if I tried to do that to you, you'd just knock me out. But
No, but you know, you learn who to trust and who to tell things to.
I was going
to
say, how do you get there, though?
Like, why did you call the guy a bitch, though?
Yeah, I kind of want to know that, too.
What did he do?
He was a hell of an artist, okay? So I had my mother bring me a picture.
And Chew.
She brought me a picture of my Harley. And I knew this guy was a hell of an artist. So he requested some paper and some pencil, lead pencil. And he drew out my Harley, and he'd take paper, and he'd just, like you're rolling a cigarette, but he'd roll it to a point, and he'd use that point to fade the lead so it was dark to faded.
Mm-hmm.
And he made and I still have it, he made an identical picture like you took with a camera of my
Holy
Harley.
Shit.
And he screwed one up. So he had this bike already drawn out, but he didn't like it. So he crumbled the paper and threw it away.
Oh,
so I
geez.
Ran over there and grabbed him. He said, that's my trash. Don't fuck with my trash. I'm like, don't be a bitch. Wham!
Happened that fast.
So he got pissed at you picking up his...
Yeah, he didn't. You don't touch somebody else's stuff. Even if they throw it away, you don't touch it.
Sheepers.
You know? And that,
you should have said, hey,
now,
man.
That was his prison life. That wasn't county jail. That was his prison life.
One man's trash is another man's treasure.
That's what I thought. That was a hell of a picture. I wanted that and the other one.
For sure.
Later on, he did draw me another one, and I have that one yet.
Do you know why he was in prison before?
He beat the shit out of a state patrolman in Idaho.
Oh.
Probably had it coming.
Yeah. Most of them do. Do not, I guess.
All right. I got stopped. Just a quick little tidbit. I got stopped on my motorcycle one time, and I had a novelty helmet on. The illegal ones.
Okay, thank you.
And the... two state patrolmen stopped me down by Salem Road, and they took my fucking helmet away from me. And then they let me leave.
They let you leave without a helmet?
Yes.
Okay, that is stupid.
I know. I'm like, so of course, their car's pointing right at my bike, and I was running late. I got warnings for...
How did they even let you... Like, that doesn't make any sense, because the helmet law was still there, right?
Because...
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
So they take your... fake helmet that still would have done something and tell you to just be on your way?
They didn't want me to leave. They told me I had to have someone bring me a different helmet. And I said, I'm not sitting here waiting for someone to bring me a helmet. I'm already running late. And they're like, well, we're going to go this way. You go that way. So I got on my bike and started as fast as I could so the camera would see it. They like squealed the tires, whipping a shitty, heading back the other way. And I'm like, whatever. So I got, I don't know, 6 miles in with no helmet. And
cheated the law like a long time ago.
Such bullshit.
I agree. I don't get that.
I think I remember that day because didn't you stop at my dad's house and get a helmet from me?
I did.
So now he's got chaps and a helmet from you?
I gave the helmet back.
He gave me the helmet because it was a legal helmet.
Yeah, Lee's bailed me out of a few situations.
How did you
before.
Two meet, by the way? How do you know each other?
I think he picked me up for work one day.
Yeah.
What work?
Boy, I bet that's been 16 or 17 years ago.
Oh, sure, yeah.
We both worked out at Land Management, west of the Berg there.
Yep.
And Lee picked me up and just had a nice little conversation for the 20-minute drive out there.
Yeah, but how did he even know who you were or where to pick you up at?
The bosses told him. They knew.
Yeah.
Everyone knew what was going on.
And I knew some of his relation too. I knew you know, Ken and everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So I spent a lot of time in Petersburg.
Ken Hen. I think that's a cool name.
5'10" Ken Hen.
So talking about all this jail stuff, like what actually did you do to wind up in jail?
A lot of misdemeanors. I did have a felony charge, actually. Three felony charges brought upon me And that was basically with my drinking. I was in a messed up relationship I shouldn't have been in to begin with.
Probably bullshit charges anyways.
Well,
I'm biased.
I know, brother. But, you know, I've always said this too. There's three people in this world that know that I was innocent of the charge, and that's me and the person and God.
God.
You know? So, but with my past record, if it would have went to court, I would have went to the pen then. You know?
Doesn't look good on paper.
No, not when you have, you know, 13 different, you know, misdemeanor charges for assault and stuff like that. So
you got in a fight or what?
Well, yeah, I was accused of use of a firearm to commit a felony, terroristic threats. I threatened to kill somebody, and I went to jail, and they put me on a $1 million cash only bond.
Oh, wow.
And when I heard that, I'm like, I'm gonna die here, you know. And I had one phone call, so I called my buddy Fluff, Norfolk, you know. And I said, Fluff, I mean, I was bawling. I'm thinking, you know, I'm going to die in prison. Yeah, this isn't happening. You know, they told me that when they hauled me to Madison, they told me I'd be out within a couple hours, as long as I had a buddy that had a couple hundred bucks that, you know, bail me out for domestic dispute or, mm-hmm. you know, stuff like that. Well, when I got arrested, I was drunk. And
so do you remember what it was over? What were you fighting over?
Well, I was living with a lady. The lady was living with me, actually, in my house. And my daughters were coming that weekend. It was a Friday night. And, you know, I was getting ready for my daughters to be there. And she got upset with me for being drunk. But yet her and her daughter were upstairs smoking weed. You know, and I'm like, you know, the drugs, I've done a lot of drugs mm-hmm. afterwards, mm-hmm. after all this crap. But before that, when I was younger, drugs were never sociably acceptable in my family,
right.
You know. So if Dad would have found out that I did half the stuff I did, he would have never spoke to me again. But back then, it just wasn't. I wasn't ready for my kids to be around that. You know, I was okay with them being around me being drunk all the damn time. Mm-hmm. But
socially crazy. Acceptable. Yep.
Right. So we started arguing about that, and the next thing I know, I just told her to get the hell out of my house. Well, I'm living here too. I help make this house beautiful, blah, 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 blah. Well, I walked over to her grandfather's clock and I was going to throw it out the fucking front window. I did not want her in my house anymore. You know. Well, then her daughter seen this, so she called the cops. Well, the cops came and what's going on? You guys are fighting. We're going to have to, you know, domestic violence or domestic dispute, they called it. We're going to have to take you down to, you know, to Madison because I lived right outside of Norfolk. And I'm like, well, you know, I just want this woman out of my house. You know, we don't love each other. We're not good together. Blah 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 blah. Besides that, she's smoking dope up in the bedroom. She's what? And I said, well, you can go get a drug sniffing dog if you want. Go through my house. This shit's in her top dresser drawer. Well, she heard me say that.
Oh no.
So then the domestic dispute became domestic violence, terroristic threats. She told the cop I was going to blow her head off. Blah 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 blah. So. I was
but you
already,
weren't actually going to blow her head off?
No.
Maybe
I was
thought
already,
about it a few times?
Looking back at it, but, you know, I was actually handcuffed in the car, and the deputy told me I was going to go to Madison, and if I had a buddy that could bail me out for, you know, probably going to be $250 bond or whatever, mm-hmm. that'd be fine. Okay. Well, in the meantime, she was telling the cops that I was, you know, grabbing her, pushing her. I pushed her down some steps, did all this shit. I'm like, none of that happened, mm-hmm. you know. Well, Mr. Moore, she said you put a gun to her head and was going to blow her head off. And I said, I'll tell you what, if I put a gun in someone's head,
I probably would have done it. Yeah,
that's the end of the story, you know. You know, because I was drunk and everything. I wasn't blacked out drunk. A functioning alcoholic can do a lot of shit while they're drunk and still mm-hmm. remember it. People say they don't remember stuff, but I think they choose to not remember things. I mean, obviously you can black out and not remember, mm-hmm. but a lot of shit goes remembered, and you just take that with you. But anyway, I got to the jail, I got to Madison, and they put me in the booking room, and next thing I know, I hear over the loudspeaker, Mr. Morris has put on a $1 million cash-only bond. I'm like, what the fuck? And I'm beating on the door. What's going on? And then the lady came, the jailer came, and said, Mr. Morris, you've been put on a $1 million cash-only bond for terroristic threats, use of a firearm to commit a felony, Third degree assault.
You didn't even do any of that shit,
Second degree assault. And I said, what do you mean? No, I didn't. You know, and I can look you both in the eyes and tell you I didn't, whether you believe me or not. That's your guys', you know, and everybody, whether they believe me or not, I really don't care. I know, you know. So they gave me my one phone call, and I had nobody to call but my best friend in Norfolk.
Fluff.
So I called Fluff, and I said, fuck, man.
That's so funny.
I don't know what to do. And Fluff's like, well, I've been into some situations where I had to have an attorney, and this is the attorney I use. I'll give you his name and number. Fly a kite, you know, so you can make a phone call.
I'm never going to think of flying a kite the same again.
To make this phone call to call this attorney. So I called this attorney, and that was Monday. I got thrown in jail on Friday, so I got to spend the weekend in C-Pod in Madison County with a bunch of people. Anyway, Monday came.
Hold on, back up. C-Pod?
C-Pod. The jail cells were pods.
I do not know anything about jails.
I don't. How would I?
I mean, okay, I'm sure you're not a saint.
You've been in jail?
Yeah.
I have not, and I don't think I would. I would
just for a
what
night.
What does C-Pod mean? Like, are you in there with a group?
Yes, yes.
They gave me my own room. They
oh,
knew.
So you're special? So
they
you
know
they
knew I was. They knew I was going to be trouble. They only even kept me for one night too.
Okay, so you're in there with a group,
right,
of people,
probably 10 guys.
And then, but is the toilet in there too?
Yeah, and showers.
This is what I don't get. This is what I do not understand. You have to answer this for me right now before you. Like, I'm sorry, I have to cut off because I've been bugging Jacket about this. How do you get over sitting down on a toilet in an open room with people and taking a shit and being okay with it?
When you gotta go, you gotta go.
There is no freaking. I think I'd hold it until I died.
Well, exactly. Now, me myself, I carried my towel with me. Okay.
Oh.
So I used a towel.
I'd have to more cover my face than anything else. Like I couldn't.
Well, some of them guys just didn't care either. You know, when
I'll
you
take
go,
a
you
shit
go.
And look
actually,
you right in the eyes.
That should be when you. Yes, that should be when you get your dominance in there almost if you sit down and shit and just stare at everyone as you're shitting. I've got you all right now. Like you're going to be holding my pocket later.
I was at this time in my life, I was in my late 20s, early 30s, you know, and from a small town and just misdemeanors and stuff, I didn't have any idea about the bigger jails, you know.
Right.
So this is all new to me. So like I said, I was in jail over the weekend. I flew the kite, got to talk to an attorney. I had a bail reduction hearing, and they reduced my bond to $75,000, but I had to come up with 10%.
Jeez.
Well, I called Mom and Dad. Mom and Dad like, we ain't got $7,500. We can probably get $4,000 or $3,500.
Mm-hmm.
So they got what they could get, Fluff and Bogey Hogan. They came up with the rest, you know, and I got bailed out of jail then. And then I got stipulations. Stay off that damn Harley. We got you out on bond. We don't want you to, you know, flee.
Right.
And I'm like, man, there's no way I'm going to go, but not riding my bike is going to kill me. So
why would that be a stipulation?
Because I know that the guys that came up with the other money, other than my family, they went and got loans for the money. And they
so
had
they
to put
worried
up,
about
they,
you paying
they,
them
and
back.
They put up, collateral to get them loans.
They didn't want Lee to flee.
Right. Lee to flee.
But, shh.
Sorry.
That was a good one.
Go on.
So they wanted your bike for collateral.
Right, right.
Okay.
And then it went so far as they wanted me to sell the bike. So then I thought, you know what?
Fuck
hell yeah.
These guys.
I can put a for sale sign on my bike, and then I got to advertise it so I can ride it.
There you go.
You know? So I put a for
found
sale sign
loophole.
for $22,000 on a $10,000 bike, which no one was going to buy for $22,000, you know? And that kind of hurt my friendship with Fluff for a long time because he knew me well enough to know that I'd never screw him over. But when there's a sum of money involved, you just don't know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And me being an alcoholic,
yeah,
you know, I can look at you square in the eye sober and you'll trust me. Drunk, you're not going to trust me with,
right,
you know, $4,000
so
or whatever.
So did you pay him back?
Oh, yeah. Yep. After I got sentenced, I got the bond money back. They kept 10% of the $7,500. So I paid the friends off. And then Mom and Dad, I gave them what was left, and I still owe them. There's been several times. That was the only time I've ever had to reach out to friends to help bail me out of jail.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times it was $500, $700, $1,000. The folks always had that, you know. So the last time my folks bailed me out of jail was the last time I got thrown in jail on my grandson's birthday. I was put in, and bond was $1,000. And my dad told my mother, let him sit in jail. We're not doing that.
So do you think that helped you become sober?
No, because as soon as dad went to work, mom went down to the bank, took the title to her car, and got $1,000 and bailed me out of jail. Sure as shit, I thought mom and dad were going to get divorced.
Shysters.
You know, mom, my mother, she was the only one that actually kept faith in me. Everybody else, I ruined that with being drunk and doing the things I did, because I did a lot of terrible things and shit. But it was, I think, after my time in jail then, I had that 92 Harley, and before I went to jail, I was riding it out on the gravel roads, and a friend of mine, Cody, he jumped. We were at his house partying and stuff, and he jumped on my bike and rode it around the yard and stuff, and that was cool. Then Eddie, he thought he was going to do that, but he jumped on my bike, and I didn't want him on my bike. So I'm taking off running after him, and he hit the road, and he took off down the road. So me and Cody jumped in the Bronco and followed him. Well, we came to an intersection, and Ed turned around and looked, and then he just gunned it. Well, he went around in a circle and wrecked my bike.
Oh, man.
Oh, then he took off running. I never did see him after that. Because I would have beat him. But I got my bike, and I rode it back to the house, and the windshields broke, the headlights broke out. It was just, the gas tank was smashed in. It was a disaster. Well, shortly after that is when I got sentenced and went to jail. After getting released out of jail, one of the first things my dad told me was, let's get that bike going. You know, he seen something in me that was a change, I guess. Mm-hmm. You know,
that's awesome.
And then that's what fueled my desire to not drink after that, after being released. You know, a lot of people, when I got released out of jail, a lot of people said, well, you can't go to the bar. I can go to the bar. If I want to drink, I can drink. Oh, you're on probate? No, there's no paper, mm-hmm. You know, paper clean. So I could do whatever I wanted to do, but I just chose not to, you know.
How long were you in jail?
Eight and a half months.
Okay.
At one time. I spent damn near a year and a half on and off. Sometimes weekends, sometimes 30 days, sometimes 60 days. But the longest was 8.5 months.
Wow.
And that I don't know. I made fun with it, though. I mean, there's a couple of real cool stories. After my grandson was born, I got drunk, I thrown in jail, I got sentenced, all that shit. Well, my grandson was like 6 months old, and my daughter at the time lived in Minnesota, so we could write letters back and forth, mm-hmm. And she sent me a letter saying that she's going to be in Omaha seeing her mom, and she'd like to come down and see me. Is that going to be possible? So I flew a kite to the sheriff and asked him for special visitation rights, because if an inmate has somebody that wants to come visit them and they live more than 100 miles away, you can actually get special visitations. Otherwise, visitation was like on Wednesdays and Thursdays for an hour.
Certain times.
Yeah. So I got special visitation rights for my daughter to bring my grandson down. And she came down like on a Monday. She spent the weekend in Omaha with her mom and stuff. And she came down to Albion, and she brought my grandson in. Of course, they patted her down, making sure she wasn't bringing any contraband, went through the diaper bag, wouldn't let her bring the diaper bag in. But I had to call her because I couldn't remember. I thought we were in the sheriff's office when we got to see each other, but we were actually in the booking area, she reminded me, because I had my orange jumpsuit on, and she was cuddling her son, and I asked the jailer, you know, can I have contact with my grandson? Oh, no, there'll be no contact, no contact. I said, well, I know I want to give my daughter a hug. No. And I can't even hold my grandson. Well, Deb, one of the jailers, said, Lee, it's going to be okay. You can hold your grandson. So I picked my grandson up, and about that time, he peed all through his diaper. So I had pee running down my shirt, my pants. Oh, my. What the hell? You didn't drink a 12-pack before you came and got me or came here or what?
Yeah.
You know, so that was, there was another instance where they had to put fluorescent bulb covers over all the bulbs in the sheriff's department for safety reasons and stuff. So they got us inmates out, so we get a stepladder and pull the bulbs down and put tubes on them, put the bulbs back up. They put me in the sheriff's office to do this. So I'm standing on the sheriff's desk, pulling down these fluorescent bulbs. I look over, and there's his revolver sitting there. You know, I'm like, oh, they trust me.
This tool could come in handy later.
Yeah. I'm like, this is crazy. Why would they do this? While I was
test.
In,
was it a test? Yeah,
probably. You know, and while I was in, you could make phone calls. You could fly a kite to request a phone call. You could make long distance phone calls if you had a phone card. If not, they all had to be local.
How do you get phone cards?
Someone
has to give you
yeah,
one.
Yeah, okay. Visiting. You get that. But one of the jailers brought the cell phone to me, and at that time I was in jail for a protection order. Me and my ex-girlfriend got into it, and the cops came, and she bailed me out of jail. I got thrown in jail for violation of protection order, and she gave my mother the
How
money.
How does that
to,
work?
Right. And why didn't she get thrown in? Because I was with her when the state patrolman pulled us over.
You know, those mood swings from the women.
Oh, don't get started.
You know,
I have to revert to a question, though. So you can't, like, see your daughter or give your daughter a hug or your grandson, right?
Right, right.
So how does it work when there's conjugal.
I don't do that there.
That would be more prison yeah. visits.
So you don't get those in jail?
Not in county jail, no.
But
no.
How long were you in jail for?
Just got to back it up to the bars.
Eight months is a long time.
I'm here to tell you, some of them jailer ladies look pretty good after 8.5 months.
That's just what I was wondering, if you can't touch anyone or, you know, do anything. Like, what? No, actually, what? Does weird things happen after 8 months in jail?
I suppose. Probably not in jail. I never did catch anybody doing anything weird, and no one ever caught me, so.
That's more of a prison thing, probably.
Yeah.
That's where I'm almost like, I want to interview someone from prison, but I'm afraid to at the same time. But I want to know all the answers.
I have a brother that would be totally honest with you, then he would tell you, because he spent a lot of time.
You had a brother in prison?
Not blood.
Oh, okay.
Not
gotcha.
Blood brother, yeah, but a brother.
Gotcha.
But a brother.
Right.
Like.
But, is this like a biker thing? You guys call each other brothers?
No, not. No. I mean, not all bikers.
Only if you're
no.
cool.
Yeah.
No.
If you're close.
Just
okay.
If you have this bond between one another, you respect each other.
Right. It's I think it's a lot of respect deal. Like
I get that.
Yeah. Yeah.
When I get my first pair of chaps from you, Lee, I'll feel respected.
Okay.
Lee gave me a pair of fingerless gloves one time. And I had them for years. I said fat boy across the knuckles because my first bike was a fat boy. I'm sure they didn't fit you anymore. And I went and got gas last spring. It was hoodie weather. And I took them off and put them in my hoodie pouch.
Yep.
And then I left and the fuckers blew out.
Oh, no.
And I couldn't find them. I went back and looked for them like five times. I couldn't find them. I was so pissed. I was so pissed and I was disappointed in myself because I let you down.
Yep.
Shit happens, though.
It does. It does.
More than we like
to. But I got the chaps, a different pair of gloves from you. You were always lending me.
Whatever you needed, man.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's what I needed. That's what bikers do, too. You know?
Mm-hmm.
They help each
other
out.
I would agree with that.
They help each other out.
Yeah. Like, you ever forget your key fob in Petersburg?
I've done that. I had to get a ride all the way back, right?
Oh, yeah, no. I gave you a ride. You remember? Say that.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Just had about 50 more minutes of bullshit time than we anticipated.
Right, right. Yep.
I know one time, not to get off topic here, but...
You're good.
At the sand plant. I wore my sand plant shirt
tonight. I seen that.
You were night shift and I was day shift out there, and I remember you had that Dodge Dakota and you were driving that up there. And I looked out the door... There's nothing there. And I went and I spit my dip in my hand and I threw it out the door. And in that meantime, you drove by and my dip hit you right in the window and you locked up the brakes on that Dakota and I about shit my pants. I'm like, oh man, Lee's going to fucking kill me. And I went out there and I had to kiss ass right away so you didn't strangle me. And I'm like, Lee, I just looked. There's nobody there. You appeared out of nowhere. I'm sorry. And I feel like I got it diffused pretty quickly.
Oh,
so.
You did.
You knew him at that point?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Well, then, yeah, I don't feel like he would ever question.
When I started working at the at the sand plant after I got my DUI because I couldn't truck anymore.
Right,
so
right.
Then I was.
Where did you get a DUI or how?
Norfolk. And a nice officer had an extra one in his glove box and he was willing to give me an extra DUI.
What were you doing? Leaving a bar?
I thought I was invisible. Yeah, I was leaving a bar.
That's a superpower.
That is one of the
alcohol brings that.
That is one of the sweet superpowers of alcohol. Is you think you're invisible, and that's I wasn't.
That's what I would choose every time I've gotten asked if I could have a superpower, if I'd rather fly or be invisible, and I say invisible every time.
I thought of something tonight. Do you ever show your boobs to get out of a ticket? Bribery?
Yeah. I mean, if the opportunity presented itself, maybe.
You haven't. I'm asking.
No, I haven't.
Oh. I whipped out my wiener one time. I just got an extra ticket. I just made that all up. I didn't actually do that. Who would do that?
You, apparently.
It's just for funsies. It's just a joke.
Nope. Well, I've gotten more tickets than I'm not proud of. I'm speeding tickets, which is stupid because I don't break the law, but it happens once in a while.
Criminal.
I know. It's terrible.
Believe it or not, I haven't had very many speeding tickets on a bike.
That does surprise me.
Two.
Same.
Two that pop out in my head. I was bringing my daughter back to Albion on my Sportster, my first Harley, and a family reunion was going on at the park. And man, my mom, you know, I lived in Norfolk, and I brought my little, you know, 6-year-old daughter back on my Harley, and she's like, "Who in the hell gives their kid a ride on a Harley for 50 some miles? What the hell's wrong with you?" She loved it. Shit, she fell asleep.
I don't get that. You know? I don't get why people get so upset about that. Like, she had a helmet on, right?
Yeah. No, yeah.
She did.
But, you know, I got a speeding ticket that day after I left the park, and my sister, my younger sister, was going to take my daughter home for me. So I left out of Albion, and sure as shit, state patrolman. You know, and I got it for 72 and a 60 or whatever it was. And my folks knew about it before. Half the town knew about it before.
Isn't that fun about small towns?
Well, that and the scanners. You know, everybody and their mother had a scanner. Yep. There's that damn Morse kid again. He got picked up for speeding, you know. So, and the other speeding ticket, the only two I remember was that one. And coming back from Sturgis one year, I was up there with Larry Z. And we had a little bit of an argument over my tent. He told me I put the rain cover on my tent wrong. And I asked him, "Are you sleeping in some bitch?" You know. And it rained that night. I stayed dry, and I said, "I'm going to leave at 5:00 in the morning. You're not going to be up at 5 and be ready to go." I was up at 4:30, I think, and packed and ready to go. I got down through South Dakota into Nebraska, and I was just zoning, you know, 80 miles an hour. And yeah, I got pulled over and got a nice little ticket. But I asked the state patrolman, "If you knew Larry Z, you'd understand why I'm running. I don't want him to catch up with me." But it was all good.
You've gone up to Sturgis, like more than once per season.
Last year I went up to 3 times.
3 times while Sturgis was going on.
Twice during the rally, and then once on Labor Day weekend.
Wait, 3 separate times you went?
Yeah, during the rally. Yeah.
Yep. Oh yeah.
We rode on your bike the whole way there. Three times.
Holy smokes! You don't fuck around.
No, I don't. Half the time I don't even get off my bike, pull up to the gas pump, fill the card in, pump the gas, and go.
Hey, do you know who was a little bitch and didn't go to Sturgis last year? And he can't slap me right now?
And I what?
You can't slap me right now because you haven't been in prison. So you don't have that privilege.
You didn't go up there last year?
Nah, it's been a couple
Lee,
years.
I was so mad at him. He goes every year. And so this last year, me and my friend Audrey made a commitment, and like we ordered swimsuits with his faces on them because
derailed the whole operation.
We're gonna come out whoever has not been to Sturgis might not understand this, but we're ready to come out on Titty Alley with our swimsuits on with his faces on them, and then he just decides to up and not go to Sturgis at all.
That surprises me.
I mean, it broke my heart a little bit.
And other obligations. The last time I went up there is when I drove. Someone paid me to ride their bike up there and deliver it to Rapid City Harley Davidson.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm like, well, fuck yeah, I'll do that. And then I delivered the bike and then set a good old time. Took the money and gambled a little bit with it. And I came back from Sturgis with more money than I've ever went up there with.
Right.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen very often.
I know.
Hey, so tell him actually what made you finally decide to go that year? Do you not remember this? Because you were like thinking about it, and I was like, "Why wouldn't you go? They're gonna pay you to take your bike up. You can stay in our camper. Mm-hmm. It's not gonna be inexpensive."
I don't think I stayed in there. I think I stayed somewhere else. Anyways, what was the tiebreaker?
You just decided to, like, it was me telling you that, and you said that to Kendra the next day. You're like, "Well, Katie said This would be stupid if you wouldn't go.
Yeah, I mean, you're right.
I like that. That sounds nice.
For once, you're right.
That's what she said. How many times you do that? So how many times have you been to Sturgis?
I started in 1998 on a bike. Before that, there was two times I went up there without a bike. But in 98, I rode my Sportster from North Fork to Murdo, South Dakota, and the old Ironhead said no more. So, I got drunk in Murdo, and we loaded my bike up in a Dixie's pickup. A buddy of mine from Pierce, he's gone now. But anyway, we loaded my bike up, went to Sturgis with that, and I don't remember too much of that. I woke up once underneath his pickup with a dog licking my face. We were in Spearfish somewhere in front of a bar or something. I passed out, rolled underneath his pickup, decided I was going to sleep there, and he slept in his pickup. But 98 was my first year on a bike. There was 2 years since then I have not been to Sturgis. Obviously, one was because I was incarcerated in county jail. The other one was an ex-girlfriend decided it would be a lot more fun to go tanking down the Niobrara River.
Oof. Oh, I bet that was so fun. Oh.
I actually didn't know you could tank down it. I thought you could only tube or canoe. No,
yeah, we tanked. Or maybe it was tubes. It that was like in, 82 maybe.
82?
No, excuse me. 2002. 2002. But yeah, those are the only 2 years. Multiple years, several times. Last year I went up there three times. Twice during the rally and then once on Labor Day weekend.
I can't believe you ride that far just to go up there a couple times.
At night, I've left. When I worked at Sand Plant, I got up work at 7 o'clock, 6 o'clock in the morning. I'd go home, grab my bike, and go. When I worked night shift, I'd get off work at 6 o'clock at night, go home, get my bike, and go. I found that it's a lot better for me to ride at night, not mm-hmm. so much with the deer and the animals and stuff. But once you get out of Nebraska, the animals are educated. The ones in Nebraska are like have way too much fertilizer.
Is that why I get all the big deers every year? Like they just run out in front of me. And
I've never hit an animal outside of Nebraska.
Really?
I've been through Arkansas, Oklahoma, a little bit of Texas, Wyoming, Montana. We went to Chief Joseph Highway, and what the heck is that? Up in Montana, Wyoming border.
Yellowstone.
Well, no, we didn't go to Yellowstone. We were north of that.
Alzada?
Glacier? No. Isn't there another national
park? Alzada for Titty Tuesday.
I don't even know.
I've only been there once. Have you been there?
No. Not sober anyway. Back in, I was
it's on a Tuesday.
Weird. Wouldn't have guessed
Hence
that.
Hence the term Titty Tuesday. It's a good time.
Wouldn't have guessed that.
But
titties.
The Sturgis trips for me are a lot more fun if I head up at night. It's just, for me, it's more peaceful.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't like to go then. You know, I don't like to go up there with four or five people because they want to stop.
Mm-hmm.
They want to stop. They want to smoke a cigarette, do a joint, or whatever they want to do.
You go by yourself?
Yeah.
Completely by yourself?
Yes.
Oh, my. Do that this year because you'll get straight up kidnapped.
No.
There's too many kids.
No one wants me.
He's going to kidnap him.
He says that.
Who's going to kidnap me?
Bullshit.
Here's a good one for you. I was headed to Sturgis. My sister and her husband were half a day ahead of me. They left in the morning. I was going to leave after work. So they were half a day ahead of me, right? So I get up into South Dakota. My cell phone quits working. It won't take a charge. I can't make a phone call. Can't do nothing. My daughters in Omaha are just going nuts because they can't get a hold of me to find out that I didn't hit a deer and I'm okay and everything. Well, I couldn't contact my sister to find out where they were ahead of me, and it got to be foggy. Once I hit the Interstate 90 up there, it was so foggy, I couldn't see hardly in front of me. So I pull over. I didn't even make it to Murdo. Kadoka, maybe? I don't know where I was for sure. But anyway, I pulled over. Hell's Angels from Illinois and Red Devils from Illinois were all there. There must have been 30 of them, okay? So I walked over to them, and you guys heading west? Well, hell yeah, where are you going? You know, they weren't really being a smart ass to me, but they were just kind of filling me out, I guess. And I said, well, I was going to head to Rapid City, but with this damn fog, well, just follow us, they said. Them crazy bastards were doing 70 miles an hour.
You
couldn't even hardly see
How
in front
would you
of
pull over a group of bikers like that? Like,
I don't.
You couldn't.
I've never seen them pulled over.
I haven't either. I mean, I haven't really seen them. But so when and where did you meet Sonny Barger?
I met Sonny Barger on Main Street in Sturgis.
Oh,
explain who that is again for people that don't know who that is.
Sonny Barger was a national president, one of the founding fathers of the Hells Angels. A lot of people don't know that Nebraska is the second out-of-state charter, the very first out-of-state charter. In 1966, the Hells Angels came to Nebraska. A lot of people don't know that. And that was the year I was born, so I don't know. I'm not a member or anything like that. I don't want people to think I belong to some club or anything. I don't, but I do support them. I have a lot of respect for what they believe in, their brotherhood, you know, their camaraderie, their respect for each other and yep. stuff. I don't have, there's good and bad in everybody, you know.
I agree.
I'm sure there's good and bad, you know, but I've found that I'm a lot safer around them. I had a friend at Sand Plant, Tony, asked me, because I had my bike parked in front of one of the support tents at Sturgis with the Hells Angels. He said, "What the hell are you doing parking your bike there? They can steal your tour pack. They can go through your shit." I said, "Man, this is the safest place in the world to park my bike, because no one's going to touch it because they're going to think it's a member's bike or something, you know." Mm-hmm. So
I parked by their shit up in Sturgis.
Yeah,
I've never had a problem. Like, I get off my bike, they see me. They probably don't give a shit who I am.
No.
But they know what the guy looks like. And if they've seen somebody else, they might, you know.
They would stop them.
Yeah.
They'd stop them.
That's right.
Didn't they donate a bunch of, like, bicycles to a charity for kids?
California.
Like,
yeah. Yep. Christmas time.
Yeah.
Yep. And the Omaha Club, they do a lot of fundraisers, too, you know. Mm. So it's all good. But I met Sonny. I seen him walking down Main Street. He had maybe four or five members around him. And I walked across, I jaywalked across the street.
Criminal. Just criminal.
I wanted to get his autograph, you know, and as soon as I walked up to him, these six or seven guys that were like four times my size surrounded me. And I said, I don't mean any disrespect. I do. Sonny, can I get your autograph? And then they kind of parted ways. Sonny came out. He said, "That'd be fine. Where are you from?" I said, "Nebraska." I got relation in Nebraska. A lot of people don't know that either. Up north by Bloomfield.
No, I don't ever guess that.
Yep. Yep.
I wouldn't know you.
Yep. But anyway,
I didn't know who he was.
He I don't remember what the hell I had him sign. I don't know if it's a Sturgis koozie or something, pop or whatever the hell it was. But anyway, then the next day he was sitting at one of the support tents and I bought a t-shirt and I said, "Hey, would it be possible to have Sonny sign this t-shirt, tank top or whatever?" And he looked up at me and he said, "Nebraska, right?"
Mm-hmm.
Well, man, I just like you. Melted. That was like the ultimate Sturgis trip for me to have Sonny Barger know, you know, remember who I was. You know, I just thought that was awesome.
Absolutely.
You know, and since then, I still go up there. I try to visit all the, you know, the club's support tents and stuff like that to buy shirts and stuff.
Yep.
They're a good group of people. There's good and bad in everything.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. So Sturgis kind of like changed my whole like, everything, my whole image of what I thought Sturgis was until I went the first time. Like, I thought I knew what it was. I thought, you know, just a bunch of titties and beer, and basically that's what I thought it was, and that's all it was about. But when I went the first year, it's like a whole society of people that just don't care what anyone does, but accepts absolutely everybody for what they are and who they are.
Right.
And it's such a great time. Like, you don't have to feel about being judged.
It's a network. It's a big network.
Yeah. It does. It just makes me feel phenomenal like the whole time we're there because they amp up everyone. Everyone amps up everyone there the whole time.
You meet people from everywhere.
Yes.
I have a friend on Facebook from Sweden. He comes to Sturgis every year. You know, he lives in Sweden. I mean, he flies over here. He's got family in California. He's got a bike in California. So he comes from California to Sturgis every damn year.
That's awesome.
What kind of money does that take? Mm-hmm. You know, dedication. He just loves it, you know? So I've met so many great people.
I need to touch on that too, because like the first year I was going to go was with my late husband, and we didn't have a bike. We didn't have a bike. And even in the years I've gone since, like the year he passed, I went with just friends up there, and I still didn't have a bike, obviously. But then now Miles and I go to Sturgis, and we don't have a bike, but we still go and have just as much fun as everyone else. So we'll follow the bikes to most places or, you know, whatever in the pickup. And I've laughed actually the hardest I have ever laughed in my life in the pickup rides on a few days that like Jacket will ride with us or, other friends. Or
last time I went up, I had to bring sold bike from point A to point B and then ditch it, and we just kind of orchestrated this. They're going to pick me up at the Harley dealership, and then we're just going to go from there. And I don't have a bike anymore, which I don't really give a shit because I'm like, I've seen it, whatever. It's cool every time, but then when we go to Deadwood or somewhere,
where
then I can ride in the back of the pickup and look around and see shit, not where I have to worry about dying driving off a cliff or something.
Right,
you know?
Right.
But
have you seen many accidents up there?
The last time we went up there, we came back from Alzada, and it was my brother and I and Big Ben and Odd, and we came around some curves. We took the back way out of Alzada, and I can't remember the town, but it was really curvy, and there's three bodies laying on the side of the road with white body bags.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, their toes sticking out, like they're gone.
Yep. Yep.
And that was really hard to not look at, but also like kind of just, you know, makes reality set in that you can't fuck around, you know?
No, you got to be on your game. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You got to be on your game.
You can't be getting shit-faced and then going, you know, save that for later.
Right.
Make good decisions.
Right.
But
last year, the second weekend when I was up there, I was on Iron Mountain, and there was an accident right in front of us. A gentleman took a curve too tight and ended up going in the ditch, laying his bike over. So the guy behind him stopped and
caused a pileup.
Yep, caused a pileup. So another bike came and hit him. The cops got involved. And the original guy that stopped to assist, to help, mm-hmm. was actually drinking. So he got a DUI out of the ditch.
Oof-da.
If he would have just kept going on, everything would have been maybe okay, maybe not. I don't know. You know.
Yeah, I feel like an asshole doing that. But do you... You were going to say something before.
Go ahead.
I was thinking, because I've only known you since you've been sober.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think we'd have been friends before that? You're thinking a lot.
You're too nice of a guy. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I think we would have got along.
But not somebody.
But you would have got tired of me being drunk.
You wouldn't have beat him up.
I'd have probably just beat the shit out of you.
That you probably could have back then. I was drunk all the time. No, but I lost a lot of friends back then because I would go to the bar and everybody was having fun. We were playing cards or throwing darts or something. Next thing you know, I'm throwing darts at the big screen TV.
Throwing cards at the darts.
Yeah, just being stupid, you know. And after a while, people get tired of that shit. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's like, well, who's going to babysit Lee tonight? You know?
Everybody that's listening right now is thinking of a friend that they have that they've had to do this
that
for.
They've had to do that
every
for.
Single person. Yes.
I mean, I got so bad in Foster, Nebraska one night. I had like a $400 Harley Davidson jacket. And a buddy of mine, Woody, told me, you know, you go to the bar, you're drinking, take your coat off, put it on the bar stool, set on it. That way you know where it's at all the time.
Forgot it.
And I forgot the damn thing.
Fuck.
I lost it. Lost.
Speaking of jackets.
Oh, yeah.
You're one of the people that always call me Jacket.
Yeah.
You know where that came from, didn't you?
Yeah. You told me.
Tell the story. We need to know why Jacket is called Jacket.
When someone was asking you your name.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
What's the story? Okay, we need to know why you're called Jacket.
We was at the off-road ranch in Norfolk, and me, a buddy, his fling for the weekend was there, and he went to go take a leak. There was a few other people, and they went, I don't know, get more beer or something, come back. And so it was just us three there, and he goes around the camper to take a leak. And I said to his girlfriend, I'm like, hey, what's your name? And she goes, my name is Pussy Galore. And I just put my head down, and I was wearing a jean jacket because I was too poor to have leather jackets. Like, you know.
Yeah.
So I'd just go to Baumgart's, get a $50 jean jacket because I'm like, oh, this is probably going to do good enough if I take a spill. Just next best thing to leather. And so then I said, my name is Jacket. And my buddy was around the corner and he heard me say that and he came around the corner laughing and he told everybody the story. So that's why
everyone
called me Jean Jacket.
Jacket. It's just one of his, even my kids call him that.
Yeah.
They're like, it's Jacket.
It's stuck.
I even had it on a plate. It's hanging up in my brother's shop. Jacket.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Nice to have a cool nickname like that, really. Do you have any nicknames, Lee?
No.
Never did, not one.
No. Well, the guys in Norfolk used to call me Fuckstick. Because I was always fucking around, you know. joking and stuff when I was drinking, but that carried things too far too, because I was fucking around, everybody's having fun until I had too much to drink, and then shit would hit the
fan. Then you were the only one that was having fun.
Yeah, I thought I was having fun. I'd wake up underneath the pool table and
not remember a lot of things.
Like, how the hell did my bike get home? And then Fluff would say, God damn it, I rode your bike home for you. Shit, did you grab my coat? Your coat wasn't there. Well, shit, I must have left it in Foster then. You know, and I called the bar and no, we
gone.
Don't have the coat here. It's gone. You know, so it's just like with my drinking and stuff. When I spent that time in jail and I realized I didn't want to waste my life and miss out on my grandkids' lives and stuff like that, it was like I transitioned from one addiction to another.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had bikes back then when I was drinking. Was always having fun with them, I thought. Never got in trouble. I would stop at Northwork and I'd get a half a pint of Jack Daniels and a bottle of Coke, and I'd pour the Coke, some of the Coke out, pour the Jack Daniels in. That bottle fit just perfect between my handlebar and my mm-hmm. windshield. You know, and I have it gone before I got the Albion.
It scuffs your windshield when the vibrations are out, but it's always in the same spot.
Yeah, two little scuff marks.
Why do I,
on which side you put it on.
Why do I know that?
I don't know.
I used to just get on my Fat Boy and grab a six pack and that was it, and head out west and slug that six pack before I got to wherever I was going. You know, they'd be warm and shook up, but it didn't matter.
Yeah. Kind of like warm beer. It's weird. I don't know. Anyways.
I don't know. I guess I transitioned from one addiction to another. After I got sober, decided the jail cells weren't going to be good. The bars weren't going to be good. That style of bar, you know, so I basically transitioned into another style of bars.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I really got addicted. At one time, I had seven Harleys.
I was just going to ask you that.
Holy smokes.
I had three CVOs. I had a big dog shopper.
Good Lord.
And that's four. I had a Sportster, a lowrider, two lowriders, I believe. I had seven bikes.
How many have you owned total, you think? How many have gone 20, through?
28.
Holy shit.
My goodness.
I remember years ago I told you, because you had some open space on your arm, I said, Lee, you need to make a graveyard of tattoos on your arm with all the bikes.
I did. Remember headstones, and every headstone has letters in it.
I love
FLST, all that. Oh, yep.
Very cool.
I started running out of ink. I got old. I started shriveling up. I should have put this shit on my back.
28 bikes.
Yep.
That's impressive. I've had three Harleys and probably four Yamaha, Hondas, Kawasaki's. You know, just shit we'd pull out of the woods. And Danny'd get them going for me. And then my Harleys were always good, though. But it scares me riding my bike up alone that far, because I'm like, this... Your bike's all got way more miles on mine, but mine's a 2008,
mm-hmm.
and obviously you got several bikes over 100,000 miles on them, but mine's like 97 or 8,000 miles, and it just makes me nervous, because it's, you know, it's got a lot of...
And you don't know what you're going to do if something happens.
Yeah, exactly. I'm limited. You have saddlebags and stuff. I got that Super Glide. I got no baggage. It's just whatever I can stack on there.
Wish I had no baggage.
You are baggage.
My green bike, I have 135,000 miles on it.
That's impressive.
I'm on my third engine now. At 65,000, I put that 120R race engine in.
That's the one you got a turbo on that.
No, the turbo bike, when I hit the deer with, I traded that for... I
thought that was a green Goblin.
No, Goblin don't have a turbo. Just got that 120R racing.
I thought that green one was always your favorite.
It is my favorite. That's why it's in Sioux City getting dyno tuned right now. I just had York rebuild the engine, put 124 pistons and cylinders on that 120R. It's making about 147 horse.
That's why I can't ride with you. I can't keep up.
Oh, shit.
I have no clue what either of you are talking about.
Cubic inches and stuff.
I'll just stay over here.
But I've owned several bikes. That green one I'll always have. I'll always have that. I wish I would have kept that Brown Springer,
mm-hmm.
the anniversary one. I wish I would have kept that.
There's same color as the one I got.
Yep, exactly. Same paint schematic and everything. I wish I could have kept that or would have kept that, but I can't look back now.
No,
that's fine. That's fine. I got the bikes I want to have right now. I got a 98 Heritage Softail Springer, and I got this 2011 CVO Ultra with a heated seat. Don't
pretty
have
nice looking bike.
Yeah, it's a nice bike. It only had 10,000 miles on when I bought it. I bought it late last fall. I got 15,000 on it now. I got to change oil again. But it's never ending. I ride to work every day. I ride all the time.
Every day? How in the winter?
There's been some days that I don't, when I get up late. But with enough leather on, you don't get cold.
How far away is your work?
I work 47 miles.
Holy
yep.
But you can't ride that in the winter, do you?
No, well, on nice days in the winter. You know, when it's minus 30 degrees out, you get used to that cold weather.
And no, you don't. Sudden, you don't get used to that weather.
But then all of a sudden it's 35 degrees. Oh, my God.
The heat wave.
Yeah,
it's like springtime. Coldest I went, I think, was 30 degrees for a little over an hour. And I'm like,
I rode my green bike when Kim and Millie were with us, lived in Petersburg. Mm-hmm. I rode my green bike from Columbus to Petersburg. It's 13 degrees when I left Columbus.
Nope. That sounds like
most of the time I had like my hands in my pockets. I would always turn
the screw underneath my throttle and then put my hands on the jugs.
Yep. To keep you warm.
The jugs.
So who's driving? You bunch of jackasses. You're just on the old school bikes, pedaling without steering.
The front tires.
So your legs are like your legs are driving.
You just shift your weight.
I'm watching both of you do this right now, and I wish it was being recorded because it's funny.
I mean, it's not that hard to do. I mean, I can even do it on my Dyna.
That's so scary though. Like one little thing could happen.
You could hit a deer, and then what?
You don't have your hands on the handlebars, and then you are fucked.
Well,
you probably.
Yeah, I told my dad
I was going to stop cussing. I just did.
Sorry, Dad.
I suppose.
My dad don't. Fault. My dad don't give a shit.
He's dead. So.
Ouch.
Okay, with my sobriety, I've gained back a relationship with both my daughters.
That's awesome.
My oldest daughter's 38. My youngest daughter's 34. My oldest daughter has 5 kids. My oldest granddaughter is up in Wisconsin going to college. I don't know where she got that from, but my oldest grandson has got his car tore apart in his grandma's garage now. I know where he got that from, but it's cool because now every day I'm either talking to Amber or Ashley. You know, every day they're calling me, Dad, are you on your bike? You know, this weekend. I got a text or a message on Facebook. Dad, you better not be on your bike. You better be home because the wind came up and it was getting bad out and stuff. You know,
it feels good, don't it?
Yeah, it does. It really does. And I was able to. My youngest daughter did not like the bikes when she was little. Her feet fell asleep. Her butt was sore. You know, my oldest daughter, she loved it. Now with my oldest daughter having kids, she doesn't really care to ride. That's dangerous, Dad. That's dangerous. You know, she's got the responsibility of the kids and stuff. And my youngest daughter with no kids, she's like, Dad, when are you coming back? That was fun. I went up there last fall, and a year ago, actually. She just posted on Facebook. I guess it would have been last spring. But anyway, I didn't bring a helmet with me because I didn't think she wanted to go for a ride. She said, Dad, you brought the bike. I want to go for a ride. I said, whoa, no shit. Let's go to Walmart. I'll buy you a cheap helmet or something. We got to Walmart. Ooh, Dad, I don't like that. I don't like this. Let's go to Harley store. No. I don't want to go spend $180 on a helmet you're going to wear for a ride. So we ended up going to a little ATV shop, and she found a blue helmet to match my blue bike, my Road Glide, and we rode, I don't know, 3 or 4 hours. She just loved it, you know? So it's not just the bike thing, it's the talking, you know? Mm-hmm. I gained their confidence back. They can talk to me about relationship problems. They can talk to me about financial problems, vehicle problems, you know? We just talk about everything. I share a lot of my personal adventures and things that I'm going through with them. They help me out.
Love that. You have a lot more value out of your life now.
Yes. You know, and I never had that when I was drinking, you know. Mm-hmm. When I got divorced from their mother, I had, you know, visitation, custody during the summer. I guess I had them for the summer, then she would get them every other weekend.
Can I cross the line with that one? Was the divorce about your drinking?
Drinking. Okay. Yeah, it was. It was. We had,
or that's what it came down to, basically.
It did. We, you know, my drinking, going out with the drivers or the mechanics or my buddies. I didn't have a bike back then, but I had a lot of friends because as a truck mechanic, you work on guys' trucks and stuff, and you create a bond, you know. And these guys, these bed buggers for Andrews, they'd never be in. You know, they'd come in and they'd be in for a month. Otherwise, you wouldn't see them for a year. So I had friends from Denver. I had a colored couple from San Antonio, Texas, Turner and Ruth. They were just I call them my colored grandparents because they treated me like your grandson, you know?
And what are the bed buggers?
Furniture haulers. Furniture haulers.
I haven't heard that one.
They hauled furniture. Andrews was a big outfit business that basically military moves. So if you're in the military and you're moving from base to base, the government pays for that. And these big companies can't have a monopoly on that, so anybody can get involved in it and move that furniture and stuff. And that was really good money. So that was my first job out of college, was working for Andrews. And I got to be real close with a lot of them guys. And they would come in, we'd go out and party, you know, and then I'd stay out late or I'd stay at the motel.
So how old were your daughters when you got divorced?
My oldest was 8.
Oh, so pretty young.
Yeah, yep. And my youngest was 4.
So, no, I'm not. I should apologize, but I'm not going to because it's called crossing the line. So, how did that situation go? Did you move out? Did she stay there? What happened?
Crazy thing. I came back home to go hunting because I love to hunt. I used to. Anyway,
same. I didn't know that. Would you hunt?
Prairie chicken, deer, doves.
Quick getting off subject.
Dove season started, and then that was the rest till spring.
Well, maybe I want to talk about hunting.
I already crossed the line, so we're going to hear what he has to say.
So, I forgot what you asked me.
I asked you after, like, when the divorce happened, like, what happened?
Okay, happened? So, I came back to go hunting, and my folks wanted to borrow, we had a carpet shampooer. My folks wanted to borrow it, and I forgot some of the pieces of the carpet shampooer. So, I came back on a Friday night, and I actually got pulled over by a state patrolman for speeding in a vehicle. Obviously, I didn't have a bike back then, but... But he gave me a warning for speeding. I had a 6-pack of beer, and I think I had 3 beers in me already, you know. But I always carried gum with me and crap like that, so I got lucky. The next morning, we went prairie chicken hunting. We got back, and Mom was like, I can't use the carpet shampooer because I'm missing the piece that screws onto the faucet or whatever. And I said, well, I'll call Lori and have her bring it, you know. She can come down here. So I called the house, and I hear all this commotion. And Lori's like, well, I'm kind of busy right now. Your cousin's over, and all the kids are playing and everything. I'll call you back. Well, she never did call back. So I went out, got drunk, went hunting, got drunk again, whatever. You know, I went back home to Norfolk Sunday night. I got to my house, and it was empty. There was nothing there. She moved out.
Oh.
So all that commotion I heard was people moving her shit out of my house.
Oh, wow.
You know, and that was all because my drinking.
She pulled a little sneaky on you.
Yeah, she did. But she was, you know.
It worked.
Yeah, mm-hmm. she was scared. She could have never done that while I was there.
Sure.
You know, because of the anger and stuff, our arguments and stuff. I'm sure I scared the shit out of her, you know. And I feel bad about that. But now, today, thank God, she got remarried. Her husband passed away. The kids lost their stepdad. He passed away a couple years ago. And he was a good guy, you know. And Lori and I... We became friends again. I mean, not really friends, but we talked about the kids.
Right. And civil.
Yeah.
Yeah. Friends with the newly.
Yeah. Yeah. The soberly. You know. So.
The soberly.
It's never. I like that. It's never too late to change.
No.
Never. That's never too late.
That's
to never too to turn late your to life get around. Life insurance either. Yep. Jacket. Still haven't yet. Have
this
you?
Is. We're not talking about me.
with the drinking and the not. With the drinking and being sober, the relationship I've created back with my family, you know. And then when I did get out of jail and Dad said, let's get that bike going, you know. Dad and I became best friends. Yeah. He was a brother.
That's really cool.
He wasn't my father. He's my brother. Mm. You know, we did everything. I took him to his VA appointments. We went shopping. He loved to go to the Harley stores and look at the bikes, but he always had that fear, like, I was going to find what I wanted, and he's going to have to get out the checkbook or something, you know. But he really enjoyed that shit. And we spent a lot of great time, quality time together. He confided in me about a lot of his problems, too, you know, with health problems and him and Mom and, you know, things, financial problems
things
or whatever.
Things that you would never know.
Yeah, you know, and he shared a lot of things with me. I sometimes feel guilty because he shared a lot of things with me that he didn't share with my brother or my 3 sisters, you know.
Yeah. But
they also have to understand that I was there every day, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was trying to pay him back for bailing me out of jail all those times. All that wasted time, you know, that I didn't get to see him or Mom.
Sure.
Because Dad never came to visit me while I was in jail. He couldn't stand to see me locked up.
Did he call you at all?
No.
Nope. Really?
No. 8.5 months, I didn't hear his voice or nothing.
Oh, my gosh.
But when I got out and I went home, he was standing there and he gave me a hug and he had tears in his eyes. Dad only told me he loved me maybe 3 times in my life.
Really?
I could feel it. I knew that he did, but he never said it. He's just that way, I guess. You know?
I've seen that go both ways in families. Right. Some say it all the time and some say it like rarely, and it's kind
of
weird.
I got in the habit of saying love you bye when I got on the phone with
them. So that is just
that's
kind of
different. Yeah. That's totally different. No, love you bye and I love you is way different.
No, it means the same thing. And I don't know.
Yep. I think.
I'll probably tell Lee love you bye when he leaves tonight.
I mean, I will too, but it doesn't mean the same thing as I love you. Like, love you.
I know what you're saying, but with Dad, it did, I guess. I got him to start saying love you bye. No, he didn't mean that, I love you.
Yeah,
but love you bye was, you know, I could, it was growing. Something. It was growing.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, you got the bond there.
Your dad was a cool person.
Yeah, yeah. I miss him. The accident with losing my mom in 17, you know, it was a year and a month later we lost Dad. And
it's tough.
I hope I have the strength that he had, because when Mom died, it was like Dad, that was Dad's purpose, taking care of Mom. She fell and broke her hip. She had some health issues and stuff, and that kept Dad going. And then Mom fell again and broke her hip, and she just never did come back out of it, you know. And then we had to put her with hospice and stuff, and that just, it killed Dad, you know, it did. And then after that, he wasn't the same person. We still talked and stuff, but then he became ill. And
his purpose is gone.
Right. And so he quit taking his pills. We found this out later, you know. He quit taking all of his meds that he needed to take for his liver and his heart and stuff like that. And then it got to a point where he was in and out of the hospital all the time. And finally, the doc said, okay, this is what we have a choice we can make here, Paul. We can put you in this hospital, that hospital. We can have these specialists look and these specialists and do this or that.
They got to want it, though.
Right.
You can't just.
And he didn't want it. He looked all of us kids in the eyes and just said, I want to be with your mother. You know, so that was his choice. And that was on a Friday. And that Saturday morning, his twin sister came to visit him. And he opened his eyes to look at her that I remember and never said another word. You know, he was done.
That's tough.
And all of us kids got to say goodbye to him that Friday night. And I was the last one in the room. And he said, you're going to take care of your sisters. Dad, I don't want you to go. I want to be with your mother. That's the last thing he told me. And he was, you know. I hope I have that strength in me.
When, I think you already do. You just might not see it yet.
You're right. But
you got it.
It's just, I couldn't imagine losing, you know. Like, I lost a nephew. He was 20. Oh, my sister Mary's going to hate me because I don't remember how old David was. But he came and lived with us in Albion for a while, and we went to AA together. He wanted to get, you know, and I kind of sponsored him a little bit. And then he had a girlfriend back by St. Louis where he was from, and they had a baby. And he went back there to start his family. And he loved to fish. His dad was in the Navy, and he grew up on the water, basically. And him and a buddy were out fishing and capsized the boat, and he drowned. You know, and he was 20, in his 20s, 23 maybe, 21.
Where was that at?
In St. Louis, by Troy, Illinois, right suburb of St. Louis, basically.
Who was he with?
He was with a buddy of his. They were
so just him and one person?
Yep.
The wind just blowing too much?
No, they were fishing at night, catfishing, in a John boat, in a big reservoir.
Oh, shit.
In a little John boat, you know, and one of them must have hooked something heavy and got pulled in. Yep, tipped the boat. One guy must have fell in.
So how'd the other guy get?
He jumped in to save. They assumed that because both of them passed. They assumed both of them did. Yep.
That's terrible.
And I worked at the sand plant at the time and got off work that morning. And
again.
We went to, my brother Mike picked me up, him and Dad, and I rode with them to Troy, Illinois for the funeral and stuff.
That's where I don't know. A lot of the drowning stories I don't get because they both probably knew how to swim.
Obviously, yeah.
So, like, what happens? And that's where I think, like, I try to, like, put myself being a living person in that situation right now and think, I could get out of that, or I'd be smarter to get out of that. And that's just stupid because, like, again, my late husband, there's no way he couldn't have not gotten out of that.
Right.
Something else happened, or it was just destined to happen. I don't know. But even with, like, those two boys who were more than capable of swimming, what happened that they couldn't, like, get out of it?
The only explanation I've ever thought of or heard was it was fall, and they had coats and stuff on. So once they got wet, They got heavy, I suppose.
I think about that a lot when I go ice fishing. I'm like, man, when I fall through, what am I going to do?
That's my worst fear.
I think about it all. I think about it all the time. I think you got to be aware about what could happen and just have it in the back of your mind, have a backup plan. And I'm like, the first thing is stay calm. When you start panicking,
I agree with that.
That's when the shit's going to hit the fan. Like, I think about it. I'm like, man, it's gonna be so cold. But as long as I can get out, but I don't have the cutting edge gear for some reason. You know, my clothes will just they have like bibs where if you fall in, they are buoyant and they keep you up.
What?
Yeah,
I didn't know that.
Oh yeah, but they're just a little bit out of my budget.
And another nickname for a jacket.
I don't like to wear the bulky stuff. Anyways, we're getting off topic, but I just gotta stay calm. I think probably the key.
Right.
I mean, do you remember panicking hitting the deers? You probably did for a second. And then you're like, oh, I gotta
the last one with the turbo bike. Yeah, because
I had a turbo.
A close friend of mine had a motorcycle accident out here on the 22 highway going to Fullerton. He leaned down on his bike to do something, and they were servicing the highway, and he went off the high shoulder onto the low shoulder, Danny Hillfighter, and he went to correct himself and laid his bike over, and I said, Danny, I've never done that. What went through your mind? And he said, Lee, to be honest with you, I was trying to crawl on my bike. So when I hit that deer out here by the link, I was in the ditch, and when my bike started to go down and lay down, my foot was stuck underneath the brake pedal on the floorboard, I was trying to crawl on my bike, and that's the only thing I could think of, was trying to crawl on my bike.
And again, that I always bug jacket with this because I believe in all the signs, but that's so cool that you even heard that story from Denny to even be able to think of that when that happened, because otherwise what would have maybe happened? You wouldn't have even thought to do that.
Oh, had you not met him. I've always thought about, like, if I dump this, I'm going to try and crawl on top of it.
I don't know if it would all the time. Like, I do believe in
it's not always going to work, but I've dropped it off. I've dropped it off the side of the road before, like, shit-faced.
Yeah.
And I dropped my actual riding bike off the side of the road once and then crashed like crazy onto the highway.
So that's what happened to you.
That's why I don't do anything athletic-wise ever, anytime. That's a true story.
It was a good story.
It was not. There was a car that actually stopped behind me and asked if I was okay, and I was like, we're good.
I could go on for a few hours about this kind of stuff, so I have to save it for later.
In my years of alcoholism, it's been my greatest rewards is the closeness I've come to my family and my daughters, my grandkids. I've gained back friends, Fluff, Hogan, you know, people that...
Fluff's back.
Yeah, Fluff is back. Fluff's back. His wife makes damn good homemade noodles too, but I haven't been invited over there yet. Maybe he'll hear this and I'll get an invitation.
There you go.
But it's the rewards. I never thought, in, you know, 19 and a half years ago when I was drunk all the time, the having friends and having family that care and love you was never in my mind. Mm-hmm. You know, the only thing in my mind was getting that next drink, you know, and by the grace of God and family and love, I finally realized that I need to stop what I was doing. I needed that help, you know. And I know a lot of people give up. They don't think that it's possible, you know. But people do change, you know. You see it yourself. And if I didn't have the love to begin with from my friends and family.
The support.
And the support. I would have never changed. But now that I have, and I don't need that damn alcohol because I could never stop it. I've gained the relationships back with my family, my girls. I'm gainfully employed, making money, paying my bills, living the life I want to live, having the bikes, having them bars in front of me, you know, that the ones I want to hold on to, not the ones I have to look through.
The right kind of bars.
Right, exactly. You know, and it's having that, And there's also rewards in helping people. You know, if anybody, 100%. Anybody out yep. there needs help, you don't have to call me. Mm-hmm. You can call whoever you want to, but call somebody mm-hmm. because it's never too late. You know, I was drunk for years. I would go to a person's house knowing that they weren't there just so I could grab their beer. You know, we might have partied all weekend long and it was Sunday night and I knew, oh shit, they went to work. Oh, but we still had that 30 pack. Yep. I got to go get that. You know,
sounds kind of like me sometimes.
But with being sober and having a clear head and having the enjoyment of having that all back in my life, another great thing was being able to help other people. Sponsor,
sure.
A close friend of mine was locked up for a long, long, long time, several times, and he needed help. And there was one time between federal and state that he was out and I let him ride one of my bikes, you know, and he felt them bars. And he always brings that up. He always brings that up because we damn near hit a deer.
Of course.
But
of course he did.
It was crazy because out of all the years that he'd been away, I was there supporting him. He would write me. I didn't write him as much as I probably should have, but we kept in touch. And now that he's out, that's one of the things I do. I help him, you know?
That's awesome.
And with helping other people, that helps you, mm-hmm. in my opinion.
Yeah,
so,
I agree.
The rewards of being sober when you are an alcoholic, totally, totally awesome.
But again, the rewards of even sharing your story right now and, you know, letting so many other people out there know that you've been through it.
Right.
We'll let them know that, you know, they're not alone.
Right, right.
Like, things can happen, things can change, everything can change.
Yeah, never too late. Never too late. Leah, it's been great having you on.
You've been amazing. You've been an amazing guest.
Probably bullshit with you for another 6 hours.
I know, right?
Probably going to have to wrap it up for tonight. I'd love to get you back on here again just to tell, you know, touch on more stories.
Right.
Of the mischief that we've got into on our motorcycles.
There's quite a few. I had one brother suggest maybe I write a book.
You should. You should.
You know?
You absolutely should. You know?
I mean, why not? What are you out? Like, just like same thing.
That's what we're doing here.
Right.
Try it. We're not looking to make any money off of it. We're just seeing where we go.
People don't like it. You can change the station.
Kind of like Russian once in a while.
But if you help one person,
exactly.
That's exactly what we said from the beginning.
You know,
I think this is going to touch a lot of people here. I think
I do too. And also, I think Jacket needs to get over not celebrating his birthday. So that's how we're going to end the show with. The birthday song, because he just had a birthday.
I did celebrate my birthday.
I got you a different version of the song.
My birthday is the 7th, not the 8th.
Yeah, I know. I screwed
all you
up.
Losers.
Everyone, I screwed up Jacket's birthday, so I posted it a day late, and that's my fault, and I take full responsibility.
What is this?
It's a happy birthday song.
Sounds like garbage.
Well, it comes on and it says, like, kind of remind me of one of your songs.
Okay, well, you guys know what to do, how to reach out if you want to be on the show. Get home,
yep,
Katie.
crossingthelinedotlive.
Thanks, awesome. Everybody. Thanks, Lee.
Thank you.
Thanks,
Lee.
Love you. Love you,
brother.
Bye.
Love you, brother.
Love you, brother. Love you, bye.